Born, ladies and gentlemen. This is Nick.
And Janelle.
I want to thank you for tuning in for another podcast, Beyond the Vow. We haven't had anything for at least a couple weeks, have we?
No, we have not. It's been incredibly busy.
Very busy. We've definitely had some updates to life that have kind of come along.
Life got lifey this past 3 weeks.
It did. And plus, we've had Easter, and that was busy. Good grief. I guess we just start... We start from the beginning and just kind of do an update and kind of fill people in on where we're headed
right
and what we're going to do.
Right after we got off the cruise.
Yeah. You know, we haven't been able to really recover since getting off that cruise. I know we did the podcast about Chick Tracks, comic books, and a little bit of a cruise update. Boy, after that, everything just kind of hit the fan. And we just got so busy with work and everything in between. So I guess we'll get started. I've told a couple people. So let's go back about 2 weeks. Okay. Probably the weekend after I had, the podcast concerning Chick Tracks, I would think. We went to a family get together. We ate and everything like that. Everything seemed fine. And then Monday I'm basically, I had a Teams meeting that I had to be a part of. We had lunch, and after lunch, I'm in this Teams meeting, and I'm sitting there listening to somebody talk or whatever, and I started to feel absolutely horrible. I mean horrible. So horrible, I went and got a blood pressure cuff that was here at the house, and I hooked it up. My blood pressure was high, okay? And it wasn't necessarily the top number that was, I mean, it was high. The bottom number was bad. So yeah. At one point, my bottom number hit 113.
That's not good.
No, it's not good. And I was feeling it. Like, my face was flushed.
The anxiety you felt was no joke.
No, it was no joke at all. Because I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, this is bad. Like, this is not good. And so that evening... We just had a conversation. We were very blunt because I'll tell you, Janelle lived like her eating habits were very clean before I came around. So it's my fault. So they were very clean. And then I came along and then it was just really easy. Hey, it's Friday. You want to go grab a pizza from Fred's? You want to do this or want to go do that? Come back. Whatever. And it started to creep in.
And those are the things that I liked. Those are the things that I had to give up when I was doing the weight loss, when I was eating healthy, that I loved. So it was really easy to say, well, I'll start tomorrow.
Exactly. It feels like you're in control because you think, I can always do this next week, right? I know I can do it. You think you're in control, but you're actually not. You're kind of lying to yourself. And that's been what my problem's been. But anyway, so I get to this problem here where my blood pressure is in bad shape. And so I think at one point I hit like 183 over like 100 and something or whatever.
113 is what that one
like,
was.
Oh, it was not good. I did not feel good at all. And so we had a very honest conversation with ourselves. And Janelle's like, I think I told her, I was like, I'm at this point. I am 39 years old. This is bogus. This is ridiculous. I don't need to be feeling this way. And I need to change everything permanently, not a crash diet, not something that's just for a couple months, but permanently. So we went back to the way of eating clean that she did because she at one point had changed her lifestyle before she met me. She had lost close to 90 pounds and she was keeping it off. She was doing great. She was healthy and everything. And then here came yours truly came into the picture.
Okay. I'm not going to let you take 100% of that because my eating habits had started to slip a little bit when I had Serena, because you can't keep a little one on that lean and that you can that clean, but not that lean.
For those of you that don't, that
Serena
don't know,
was my foster
she
baby.
Serena was a foster baby. I had a chance to meet her when I first came into the picture. And, she was a wild little kid. She was cute though.
My mom and I were talking about her yesterday and how she was an incredibly stubborn little kid. Like we didn't want her to play in the water in the dog bowl because it was sitting on my parents' carpet and we didn't want the carpet wet. And she would hover her hands right over the water as we told her no. And then at the last second, she would flop in the water and then run away.
Yeah, do as much damage as possible.
And before. We don't think that she was, it never felt vicious. Mm-hmm. It felt ornery. It was. Is what it was.
So when I had met her, she had this fascination with the hot water tank that was attached
that
to this
little.
That
was a new fascination.
I don't understand. And I said, no. I said, you can't go over there to that. I said, no, you're not allowed. And she, no. And then she'd get this look on her eye and she'd stand there and she'd just stand in the vicinity
real close
of it.
To it.
Yeah, she'd just stand real close to it, like I'm not touching it, but I'm here, so am I breaking the law? Anyway, so Janelle had been on like a really nice, like a clean eating lifestyle at that point. And so here we are 3 years later, roughly. Well, not quite. We're about two. Well, we've known each other for about 3 or 4 years now. 3 years or plus. And so we've been married since 21 in September. And that a lot of that had kind of gone away, and it were spurts of it here and there, but for the most part, we would just drift back. And then one of the major issues that happened was when Dad had his issue, went in the hospital.
We were six weeks into a really healthy lifestyle.
Yeah,
I had built a routine of working out every day.
Yeah,
I had been doing elliptical every single day. Mm-hmm. I had worked myself up from, get this. I couldn't go more than 2.5 minutes on the elliptical without stopping for a break. And I had worked myself up to an incline of 7 and at an hour without stopping. So we had done a really good job of weight loss and working out. And mm-hmm. That guy in the gas station even said, you're solid.
Yeah, that was that when somebody acknowledges your work. And like,
it feels good.
You're like, okay, wow, I must really be showing a physical difference. That was when we were on our way up to see Dad at Cabell, or not Cabell, but at Ohio State. And I was just in a gas station. A guy commented, he's like, you look solid. And I just looked at him, I was like, okay. And then come to find out, the guy lived in Scioto-ville. And so but he worked out as well. And so we kind of got conversations started up. But anyway, I'm not solid anymore. I feel like I'm flabby. But that was a time where I had dropped probably 20 or 30 pounds. I put on a lot more poundage as like it had converted more into muscle. I was bench pressing like 435. I was like, man, that was the best strength of my life. And then when Dad went into the hospital, everything just came unglued because you're going back and forth. There was a lot of anxiety. You didn't know what's going to happen. Your sleeping was mm-hmm. messed up because you're expecting this phone call that's going to hit at some point during the night where you've got to just drop everything and go. It was crazy. So anyway, we fast forward past all of that stuff and we get to about 2 weeks ago. And I'm sitting there in the chair, and we had a very honest conversation with ourselves, and we're like, well, this isn't going to happen again. And so I dropped pop, I dropped my cold brew, and I'm going to go back to my cold brew, my caffeine, a little bit. It'll be moderate, but when I've really lost a lot of the weight, and I've gone to my primary physician, mm-hmm. and we've got the blood pressure stuff sorted out, but a week passed after we had that conversation. Since that conversation, I've lost around 13 plus pounds.
But he got sick in the meantime. He ended up with a fever.
It was terrible. I had a fever. I got sick. And people at work could probably testify to that, just how bad I probably sounded on some of these meetings. I probably sound like I was just roadkill. But I was sick on top of it. And then you're going through this whole thing where you're doing caffeine withdrawals mm-hmm. and you are still battling that blood pressure. And I thought I can do it naturally and knock it down. Okay. Well, fast forward a week after that, and it was last Saturday, not this, was
last
it?
Saturday.
Last
not
Saturday?
Yesterday, but the Saturday before.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Let me take my blood pressure. And that bottom number was like 94. And I'm like, this is stupid.
It's 101.
101. It's like, this is stupid. This isn't working. Even though I've lost around 10 pounds and all this other stuff. And it's like, you've taken time to get it up here. It's going to take something to bring it down.
Right.
And so we had a really honest conversation, decided we go to the urgent care. So we go to the urgent care, talk to him.
No, I decided we would go to the urgent care.
You did. Yeah. And so we go to the urgent care. Talked to the physician there. They said they normally did not give out blood pressure medication.
Oh, they were.
Yeah, but the way the look on your face, I think they realized they were going to give out blood pressure medication. And so I was prescribed like 5 milligrams of lisinopril, which is kind of like a, you know, your starter blood pressure medication. But we had a conversation. She's like, you know, if you do follow through with these lifestyle changes and it's permanent, you know, you can get off of this. She did tell me, and I was very pleased because I was kind of worried about, like, did this have any effect on my heart? You know, she said my heart was the best heart she'd seen since she had moved to Portsmouth as a provider. And I was like, oh, okay, well, thanks. I appreciate it. I'd like to keep it that way. So it's been over a week, and I had headaches that were not very fun. And I guess it was because it's a side effect where lisinopril and blood pressure meds in general will start to pull your blood pressure down to normal ranges. And I had kind of, it was a weird headache. I thought I had like something through caffeine withdrawals or whatever.
It's probably a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I took Excedrin, which probably wasn't a very good idea. And I was like, okay, why is this headache not going away? And the Excedrin really wouldn't knock it. And I found out it was because of the side effects of that medication. I don't have it now, but blood pressure started to drop. Things started to normalize a little bit. And so I think like the second week of April, I've got to go talk to who will be my new primary care provider. Mm-hmm. And kind of make sure that what I'm on is the right track, because I mean, now we're like, when we're walking, mm-hmm. we have completely changed up what we're eating, like salads and stuff, but it's not something
it's
to
grilled.
Where, yeah, it's not. So, and this is what I think people get so afraid of when they start like a journey like this. It's like, oh man, I'm having to like starve. Okay. Let me give you an example. I was an idiot when at God's Bible School, when I was there, I gained like, what was it called? The freshman 10 or the freshman 15 or whatever.
Like that,
or something
because
like that.
You,
mine was like a freshman 40. Well, it was terrible.
But okay, to be fair, most Bible colleges, though, don't serve healthy foods. They had a salad bar, but everything
why
is
would
starchy.
You eat? Yeah, and why would you want to eat it? There really wasn't anything
was
that
starchy,
great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had that issue at chapel one time where everybody was complaining about the salad and the food and stuff like that.
It was a town hall meeting.
Yeah, it was a town hall meeting because the food was that bad at one point. And then somebody commented, they said, why is it that we should eat that salad when it's so rotted looking? It's so terrible. And it's like a good point. And they were going to talk to whoever was providing the food and get it fixed. But anyway, I say that to what had happened was I wanted to kind of lose that 15, 20 pounds as a freshman when I was there at the college. So I had it in my head to do an all tomato diet. So I literally
tomato.
It was the
where most, did you come up with that?
Somewhere in this gray matter. That's the only way I can
in the gray matter.
it was straight tomatoes, just tomatoes. I would have a plate of just nothing but 14, 15, 20 tomato slices, and I would eat that. And I'm like, oh, this is how I have to live healthy now, lose weight.
Well, it's not a superfood.
A nutritionist would have looked at me and been like, you idiot, what are you doing? You know?
Now, if that were kale, it might be a different, because that is a superfood.
It is. But see, the fact is, though, you can live healthy, but yet be full and eat
and
satisfied. You know, I was not full. I was not satisfied. I was pretty depressed. Miserable. It was terrible. You know? So, that is just an idea. I hear at one point I was like, I'm gonna do the Atkins diet. I wanted that hardcore. There were days I wouldn't even eat. I wouldn't even eat.
My dad
certain
did the
days.
Same thing.
I lost probably close to 80 some pounds, 90 pounds. It was ridiculous. And I got to the point where I just wouldn't eat. I wasn't hungry. It got so bad that I went to a doctor because I started having stomach aches. And they said that I had an excessive amount of acid in my stomach because I wasn't eating enough. And it was starting to eat holes in my stomach lining. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And so you can see that where I didn't really have the proper understanding of nutrition and how to really do that. And so if I did something, I just dove over the side like, oh, that looks great. Let's go. And I just dove over into it, you know. And whether it was wrong or whatever, I didn't have a lot of information. So we come to this point, and we've taken a very good approach to this where things are if it's food, like meat, it's grilled. We're cutting back like hardly any sodium if we find it. Changed up so much stuff. No more pop. I can't tell you. Mountain Dew is like a nectar to me. It's like the stuff. I love Mountain Dew. Love it. Baja Blast. Oh, give it to me. You know, people out there are probably grunting like, you really? Yes, I really. You know, and I love Mountain Dew. Cut it out completely. You know, and just pow.
So his main beverages now are water.
I love orange juice, lemon juice. You know, And we actually tried, because, you know, I do a lot of cold brew and stuff like that. So we actually tried, and I haven't really, it hasn't really gained traction because I just, I haven't got like a pod machine or anything for it or whatever, but
I need to make you a pod of it and put it in the fridge.
It was decaf, basically a decaf coffee that I could still use my creamer with. Mm-hmm. And I did that one day and it wasn't bad or whatever, but I was trying to stay away from the caffeine. At some point, yeah, I'm going to reintroduce caffeine, but I was staying away because I thought there was something going on with my heart. There isn't.
Right.
But I also don't want to monkey with my blood pressure right now. I don't want to talk to, and I talked to, the doctor told me, said, of course, you know, you need to back off your weightlifting as well for now. Like here, I had just started back into it. I was like, oh, wow, I've got blood pressure issues. I got to weightlift. Well, you're already under pressure and you're lifting. And that's not good either.
Right. But she also, but the reason was because she wanted the medication to get into your system.
Well, true.
And,
yeah.
And get you, when I say stable, not necessarily your blood pressure down.
Yeah.
But the side effects of the,
because you could be weak. Yeah, it would make you weak.
Your system. Yeah.
Yeah. And I felt that. There was a couple of days I was like just completely so tired. I was like, why am I so tired? And then your these weren't normal headaches. It just felt strange as it loaded. Yeah. I don't have that anymore.
So my mom felt really terrible. Now, my mom's blood pressure was insanely high. And when I say insanely high,
she's inhuman.
180 over 113. Uh-huh. 87, 190 was good.
For her?
For her. There was times when, oh, she has a blood pressure of 190, 197 over 104. Great, Mom. Good job. Because it generally stayed 213, 216. She went to the ER.
So she's a high-pressure kind of lady.
She's kind of high pressure. So when it came down, so, I mean, she's had one TIA that they, that, mm-hmm. we can point to none other symptoms of a TIA.
Right.
But she's had one TIA, but she's had several physicians say because of that chronically high blood pressure, she is likely to never stroke out.
Yeah, because there's
because
no,
it's
like,
just like...
Yeah, how high would it have to get, you know?
How elastic her arteries yeah. would be.
So anyway, that has been something I have really battled with, and I didn't realize... Let me tell you something. Those of you out there that may have high blood pressure, yet you've not done anything with it, it affects you more ways than you think. Let me tell you one of the ways it does affect you, your sleep. Mm-hmm. I found through it's been a long time. I may have had this for a couple years or more, because I would find myself waking up several times throughout the night and just turning over, restless. You couldn't sleep. All side effects of high blood pressure. I get on the blood pressure medication. I close my eyes. And then I wake up at some point and I turn over and go back to sleep. Then I open my eyes and it's time to get up. And you feel cheated because you've actually slept the whole night through and you haven't woke
but
up.
But you feel
made the
better
night
than the rest of the day.
Yeah, and I was like, what is happening? Well, it's because your blood pressure is down, your body's more comfortable, and you're relaxing and you're sleeping. So it has made such a huge difference.
And if we're going to talk about this in a from a biblical or a Christian standpoint, this is all taken care of the temple. These are all things that really should happen. And the other stuff that we were putting in, lean and clean, is mm-hmm. really a biblical way to eat. God did not intend for us to have refined sugar. He did not put refined sugar on the planet. We bleach our sugar.
He didn't give us MSGs.
He did not give us MSGs. Oh, man. He did not give us high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
Like those kinds of things. And I know I've said in previous podcasts, let's not get off on tobacco use if we're not willing to stop the other chemicals that we're putting into our system.
I know.
So I'm not, you know.
Well, think how Satan wants to just look at one of the ways, and I don't think we think about it, and this crossed my mind. I thought, Lord, how can I be effective for you and preach or do anything for you? And I'm sitting here in a chair with a blood pressure cuff hooked up to me, and I feel miserable.
Right.
I couldn't hardly focus on a sermon. I couldn't do anything. Just trying to focus on something or whatever because you felt so bad. And I can't tell you how long I've kind of gone with that. And then even looking back at the cruise, there were several nights where I had symptoms like this.
One of them got you up and you thought it was seasickness. And it
was not.
It wasn't. It was just,
it was high blood pressure. I didn't know it at the time. So anyway, that, and then on top of that, you know, sick as a dog. And then you claim... It is allergies.
I had allergies. Mine were not the same as yours.
I don't know. If mine were allergies, it was allergies with an army.
Okay, so, but you had a fever with you. Like, you had that fever.
About 2 weeks ago.
You had the lung involvement. I didn't have, it was like from my throat up, and I didn't have a sore throat.
And I was coughing real bad.
mine kicked up again. It was getting better. And then I went out and mowed and mine kicked up again. So I absolutely know that what I had was allergies. Yeah. What you had, I think, was a virus.
Well, I was out there weed eating as well. And that probably didn't help matters. Normally wear a mask. I did not wear a mask. And so I probably breathed in everything, which if I do sound a little funky, it is because I'm almost through this allergy funky thing, whatever. So, and then this week we had Holy Week at our church. And, you know, I loved everything about that. This is, I have to honestly say, the first time I've ever participated in something like that, where it's really focusing and making such an emphasis on the days of the week and remembering the passing of Jesus and his sacrifice on the cross. And so I was asked to preach on, it was Friday. I was asked to preach on Friday. And I really enjoyed it. It was a great opportunity. I'm very thankful for it. Had a blast. It was really, really good.
He did an amazing job. You always do an amazing job, but I've told you this one was extra special.
Well, thank you.
So I'm going to, we'll also put the link so that people can watch that one on our Beyond the Bow, because I'm proud of you, and I think you did an excellent job and gave information.
Well, thank you. So. We had that, and Saturday we had another service. Then we had sunrise service this morning. And
you can tell on me. I don't care.
It was kind of funny. I was talking to her, and I was like, yeah, we were in bed. She's about ready to, she's kind of restless. It's literally 2 a.m.
I have restless leg syndrome sometimes, and I was breakdancing in the bed.
2 a.m., and she is restless. And so I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to sleep. And I told her, I think tomorrow, I want to go to the Saturday service. I said Sunday morning. I said, I want to go to the sunrise service as well. And then she hadn't said anything to me up to that point. It's like, she could be dead over there for all I know. She's not saying anything. I said, we're going to go to the sunrise service. I said, it's 6:30 in the morning. What? I just get this, kind of sounds like a duck. What? It's just like, it wasn't like that. No, she was going to go, but it's like, you're not sleeping in on Easter, we're going. And you know what? I enjoyed every moment of it.
You know, this has been a funky year for Easter. And once we get later in the podcast and share the next part of, after this Holy Week, you'll see why it was a funky Easter. However, I think it was one of the more meaningful Easters I've ever spent. I think it was because of the involvement. Tim Throckmorton had an amazing message last night that really felt like a hug from God in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Silas did a really good job this morning.
And he did too.
I'll tell you, it is hard to preach an outdoor service at 6:30 in the morning.
When people are revving their engines right past you.
The truck drove by and I was like, brother, do you not see that? Do you not see us being reverent at this moment?
Although, that guy may have had to have the choice of, do I putter through here or do I just get out of here? Because I was once riding my four-wheeler, came up over the hill, and there was a funeral happening in the graveyard that was around there. Yeah. I was on a loud four-wheeler. What do you do? Do you putter and make it go the longest time ever, or do you roar out of there? Yeah,
it looks like the little trail of shame as you turn around and leave. It's like, nope, bye, see you. My condolences, but see you. Anyway, so after that, we were in the service, and then this leads up to the fertility update.
We have new information and answers.
We basically, there was a test that Janelle, and I'm going to try it. You want me to try to explain it?
Okay, so I have to take an ovulation test.
Right.
And I'm going to explain this because a lot of women struggle with this.
Yeah, it is what it is.
We have been very blunt in other episodes. Yeah. So sometimes I don't think women even know what their bodies are doing, especially younger ones. So, about in between 10 to 21 days after your day one of your cycle, which starts the first day of your period, you release your egg and you ovulate. Mm-hmm. So following your period, you need to start testing, and our fertility specialist, bless his heart, he looks a little bit like Einstein, but he's been doing it for 30 years. He is intelligent. Brilliant. He is such, and he is so kind and reassuring.
Yeah.
He's, and I didn't think he was going to be that way during our first appointment, but he wanted specific ovulation tests. He wanted this kind, and they were the kind that I had seen. Oh, that'd be nice. But they're $36 for a set of
20. There's a method to his madness.
But there's a method, because you don't have to guess, because if you've ever played around with ovulation tests, it's kind of the same as a pregnancy test, where you get two lines when you're positive, and the line has to be, it's not the same as a pregnancy test where if it's a faint line, it's still positive. It has to be as dark or darker than the control line.
Right.
Well, sometimes that can be really funky to read. And so he had me get these digital tests that gives you just a plain circle if you're not positive. And if you are getting ready to ovulate, it gives you a smiley face. And what that is measuring is your luteinizing hormone. The luteinizing hormone pops in, and that signals your body, hey, the egg is ready to release the egg. So release the Kraken.
Yeah.
So we had to test, and we wanted this testing to happen last month. That was the plan. However, I had been, I think you all knew that I had been on the devil's juice, Femara, that made me crazy and weepy and all sorts of stuff. So he wanted that out of the system. And then the following month, which had been last month. But I think my cycle was a little bit messed up because of all of the 3 months of the really high dose of Femara. So, I was probably positive when we left the cruise ship, but I didn't test that morning.
Yeah, because we were driving home. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So I didn't get to do the test last month. So we had to wait an entire month in order to get this testing done. So basically what this is a postcoital test to make sure that everything, he was going to make sure that the sperm was viable in my environment. Like, my environment was not killing off your environment, is how I've been joking about it. My environment was hospital to your environment. So, and that our little Nick Juniors were staying alive in there. So it was also a vaginal ultrasound to make sure that checking out my ovaries, my ovarian reserve, just everything health-wise about me. So it was like a twofold test. Not as bad as the HSG. I think in previous episodes, you can go back to like our first round of fertility stuff and where I talked about the HSG, which that'd is where they
February shoot. February of 23.
Yeah, March, I think it was.
March.
So that dye is really, really stingy, and it doesn't hurt. This one wasn't as bad, but it wasn't.
Right.
It didn't feel good. So he looked in there and...
Well, the whole reason for the test, if I can say it, it's something you really can't plan, because once ovulation hits, then of course you have to...
the next day you have to test.
You have to test. And it just so happened that we had to test today, Easter. And so I had texted our pastor and I was like, we're probably going to have to duck out at noon. And I'm like, I hope it's not in the middle of the sermon. I'm going to feel like an absolute buffoon having to get up like that. But they were doing an altar call, and we were able to kind of slip out the back door.
Yeah.
And, man, I really wanted to see that Easter egg hunt and to see those kids go crazy. And somebody had actually videoed it, and that was really, really funny. But we got out of there, drove to Cabell, and we went ahead and went into that procedure.
Yep. So that's how we ended up in Easter clothes, in heels, in stirrups.
Yeah, that was...
So, I was super nervous. I didn't sleep last night, because what you get is you get the positive test. He called me around... It was almost 10 o'clock last night that he called me and said, did you have a positive? I said, yes, it was around 2 o'clock, because that's... I wasn't positive in the morning, but I was positive by 2:30. And sorry, the dogs are going nuts for who knows. They're playing, and it's fun times to argue.
They do argue with each other
on the deck
through the fence.
So anyway, where was I?
You were basically explaining how you had done the.
So he called me and gave me the time. So he said, if you don't mind spending your Easter, and I was like, no.
Like
I'm 40. Let's get this on the road. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, we have to. Like, there's no. there's no way. Yeah,
or we have to wait an entire month.
Another month, yeah.
To get answers. So I asked him last night because I was very tentative. I was so stinking worried. He tells you when to have sex to make sure that it's like the proper time. Mm-hmm. So we got our marching orders and we got up this morning, went to sunrise service. We, you know, did all the things. And then it was just one of those things that were weighing on my mind. I had two things. Mm-hmm. I didn't sleep well last night. I didn't go to sleep until 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I had stupid mm-hmm. dreams.
But we made it.
One of them was he couldn't find any sperm and he was pretty sure we didn't know what we were doing. That was one dream. And the other one was we were ready to go. He was going to do IUI right then. Like that's how intense I think it was in my mind.
Yeah.
Yep. So, we get down there and I will let, after he did all the testing, mm-hmm. I'll let you tell him what he said. Yeah.
So it was really interesting because, we had talked to him and he knew that Janelle had worked in a blood bank and, You were a lab tech, correct?
I was a phlebotomist.
Yep. So you were familiar with it. And then I was familiar with the lab to a point because Dad had worked at the one at Cabell Hospital for close to 40 years. So I'd been in the lab, job shadowed there at one point, and all kinds of different things. And so I thought I was actually going to be a lab tech, and I'd actually gone into medical terminology and got into that and then just changed my mind. So I was familiar with it. And so he does the procedure and all this stuff. And he's like, well, he said, it might take like 10 minutes, 30 minutes. He said, you know, I'll be back. We said, okay.
38 minutes.
Yeah, 38 minutes. Very specific. Could be 38 minutes. So we're sitting there in the room. We're just talking. And here he comes. And he's got this cane. And he's just kind of making his way down the hallway. He says, since you both are kind of lab rats, he said, you want to come in here and see these slides? And we're like, oh, sure. He takes us
in.
It was so awesome. He brought us in the lab. And so we're in the lab. And he brings us over to the microscope. And he's letting us look at the slides and things like that. And I looked in the slide. And I look. And there's little sperm just running rampant. They're loose. And I just look at that. I was like, this is amazing. I've never actually seen this with my own eyes. And he goes.
So, the insert, if you remember from our other podcast, we had done a semen analysis that had a low morphology, which is the 3%, shape.
Less than 3%. 3%. Yeah. Almost insinuating there was a severe, like I had issue. An issue of some sort. And the first thing out of his mouth, he says,
this guy's got the goods.
He said 3% morphology, my bleep.
And he really did say bleep.
And he actually said bleep. And we started cracking up. I'm like, what? He said, this guy's got the goods. I'm like, what? And so at that point, that's when we start looking through the slides. And so from that point of he eliminated that as a problem. And so he then started looking and analyzing the ovaries and things like that. So we go back to the almost at hotel room. Good grief, the waiting room there down the hall. And he comes back and he gave us kind of his understanding of what was going on, and it was that you have what appear to be polyps attached to the lining of your uterus.
Right. And a lot of them.
So the issue with that is that these polyps can secrete a liquid that causes the uterus to be inhospitable for an egg to take hold.
So, he's not sure I have that type of polyp mm-hmm. because he's been doing this for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I feel like he knows that they're in there. I do think he's unsure if it's the type that is secreting because you can't tell that. But
there's a lot of them.
But there's a lot of them in the lower part of my uterus. So that is basically stopping
implantation.
So we may have had a lot of fertilized eggs that had nowhere to go.
Right. So the what's going to happen is that...
I have to have another ouchie test.
She has to have another test to confirm that this is the situation. And what type these are. After that, she has to go back for a procedure to clear all of those out. Once those are cleared out, she has to go back for a second HSG. So if you all have been on the podcast for a while, like she said, March roughly of 23, if you go back in our podcast, you will hear the episode where we talked about that procedure that she had. And basically, it was a procedure where they forced dye through your fallopian tubes to open them up. What he's doing this procedure because of the benefits of the dye.
So the first time the wrong dye was used.
Yes. He says that the dye that was used was not correct.
There is it showed it.
Right.
But it didn't give me the therapeutic benefit that the, right. His dye would have.
This specific dye, and he showed us the studies and everything like that. There's a dye that they use. And somehow, I don't know all the details, but just from what we were told, and I took pictures of the article and stuff like that so we could look it up. But
okay, little side note on that. He hands me this article. It is a very weathered piece of paper, very flat.
Yeah, and the first thing I thought was, weathered. Yeah,
he's giving it to
us. Yeah, I thought this looks like a prized possession. Like, you're really going to give it to you? And he's like, well,
you can take
a screenshot of that. I'm like, no, he wants it back.
He wants it back. Yeah. So, yeah, and he had that on top. So I wonder if
he's probably used it quite a bit.
Yeah.
But it was out of Norway and Sweden or something like that. And he said that there is a dye that can be used for that. Something about the dye. They've done this research, and that dye has boosted fertility big time,
yeah.
And so the procedure is going to be go back, test to make sure this is what it is, mm-hmm. then go back to get them cleared out, mm-hmm. then go back for an HSG to force that dye in there, then through natural means, where we've got probably, 4 to 5 months to really try to get this accomplished. And see if they, because at that point there's absolutely nothing stopping it. And he said that after this is done, your egg reserve, he said, is around probably close to 45%. Did he say, no, you had about a 45% chance. He said she had about a 45% chance of being pregnant. And after all is said and done.
Yeah, and he said it's likely, his words, and I remember this, we are likely to become pregnant a couple months after. It wouldn't surprise him if we were pregnant a couple months after. Mm-hmm. So this led us to a conversation on the way home of what our next steps were after all of this had been taken care of.
Yeah.
IUI is not going, we specifically asked him, is IUI, so that's when they take only the good sperm and put it up into the uterus, mm-hmm. to put it closer to the egg. Is IUI going to be one of those things that is going to be beneficial? And he was like, no, because of the motility and the amount you have, because you have an amazing reserve of it, you are, his words, inseminating me correctly, yeah. and it properly and fully. So it's not the sperm meeting the egg, it's the egg implanting
into the uterus.
And so unfortunately, IVF is not going to probably be a great option for that, because if my eggs are being fertilized by your sperm
and they can't
implant, then IVF is not going to be. So we could spend thousands of dollars. And I'm talking about, so for Marshall Health, the reproductive health, their IVF starts at 18,000. Or 14,000, 15,000, I think, maybe. But that's only for one round.
Right. And if it doesn't take... And that's not
including medications.
Right. If it doesn't work...
Yeah. You have to do another one.
You have to do it again. And it's all about, you know, at the end of the day, sadly, it really comes to just about how bottomless your pockets are.
Right.
And just about everybody has a bottom when it comes, mm-hmm. to their pockets. And so at some point, we were just kind of discussing this on the way home. It's like, if we get to like October, December, and there's nothing that's happened. I asked
for September, October.
And if nothing has happened at that point, then we would probably feel better at taking that money and actually putting it into something that would benefit us. And it would not be a guess in the dark, but it would be adoption.
Because there are adoption agencies. Unfortunately, we don't live in an adoption-friendly state.
Ohio is one of the worst. It is absolutely horrible. This is a state that is actually taking a very bad stand against life. And it's a terrible place for adopting.
Fostering is not great.
So we have discussed what we probably will do is look at Indiana. Because you are familiar with their system.
They're friendly. They're adopted. Right. Indiana's friendly adoption. There was somebody else that reached out to us about like her adoption process. I don't even know this person, but.
Was it through Indiana or where was it through?
Arkansas. So Arkansas was another really friendly adoption state, and they actually, they live in Ohio, but she, I've been doing my own research, and you know, all of the stuff that the laws that passed that were not, they were abortion friendly and not adoption friendly. CPS doesn't do great with permanent placement.
Yeah, and terminating
they want to do, they'll terminate rights, but they want to do guardianships instead of adoptions. Right. And I'm not okay with that because a guardianship can be, you know, they can change that in any way, at any time they choose. And I'm not willing to do that. If they decide that they're going to give the parents again a chance 10 years down the road, and I'm being exaggerated, but 10 years down the road, then they can come and say, we're going to, this is what we're going to do. And we don't really have a say because that child is not ours.
Right.
So, I thought it was just me, hating on this area a little bit in that moment. And, but this other lady that I have no, like, I don't know her. She was, a connection that you had made through someone at work that was in, that had started fostering.
Yes.
And her friend reached out to me, you had given my number, and that lady just texted me like instantly. She's like, I got your number. I want to talk about our adoption process. Seems to be a good Christian lady, goes to church, because she was like, don't let the price stop you because money will come in. She said on more than one occasion, so maybe we'd be, when they were going through their adoption process, she said more than once someone came up and handed her $1,000 check just because.
Right.
So anyway, we're hoping that we can get pregnant, but if we're not blessed in that way, we'll be blessed another.
Right. We today removed the haze, to where we now know.
And I'm still a little weepy from it.
Yeah. It's, it removed the haze of not knowing what the deal was. Now we do. And, We have a good chance. We've got a good shot.
We do.
We do. And so we've got to go through this procedure, the diagnosis, the procedure, get all that stuff clear. Like I was joking with her, I said, we've got to make sure we get the Roto-Rooter in there and get it all taken care of, and you're all good to go.
I'm just a little extra, as he pointed out, as I was having a meltdown in the elevator.
She got in the elevator, and I thought, I got to say something funny or do whatever just to kind of help her. And I just kind of gave her help. I said, it's okay. I said, you've always been just a little extra. But, it was, I don't know. If you look at it, though, what would have happened if he'd have said, your only option right now is IVF? I mean, that's a mountain to climb in and of itself. But rather, you've been told, here's the problem, I can fix it. Mm-hmm. The only thing you have against you right now is your age. But you have reserve that's above average.
That is above my average for my age. He was impressed with the quality of my eggs, which is better than the quantity. This is how brilliant this man is. He's like, you haven't ovulated yet, but you will before bedtime. Mm-hmm. So, and he said, you need to keep trying. However, the thing that scared me, I think, the most is I have never been on birth control, and I have to go on birth control starting the second day of my period next month to keep the uterine lining thin so that they can do the test and remove the polyps.
Right.
I can go off. I don't have to be on it for the entire month. I have to be on it up into that time.
The best way he described it, he said, imagine that the lining of the uterus is a vacant lot. And he said, it'll be overgrown and it's hard to see a lot in there. He said, but on the birth control, it thins out the grass.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you can see the stuff that should not be there.
Yeah.
And then they can go in and remove it. And then of course, when the procedure's done and all that stuff, you're off of it and
we're good.
Yeah, you're good.
I just always, you know, and I think it's long-term birth control where it can be years before your system. And this isn't going to be years. It's going to be, but in my head, it was just like, birth control. Yeah. Oh no. Like that's, we hadn't talked about this, but that was the first thing in my head. It's birth control. It's going to screw me up for a couple years and we're good. But no, it is just to get a purpose done. As soon as I am through the procedure, I can get off of it. The other thing that this is going to do is because I'm fairly new at my job, there'd been a shakeup at my job where, 8 people were, 2 were laid off of the 8 and 6 were actually fired. because they had overhired. It just makes you a little anxious about taking extra time or needing extra things. I'm fully caseloaded now, so it's a little, my schedule doesn't have holes in it as much anymore. But they've all said that they're going to be super supportive of this process. So right. I just need to trust that. It's a little hard, but I need to trust that. But I can actually plan this out. And that was another ease off my mind, because it won't be so the next day I have to go into test. I had a positive ovulation test, so now the next day. And then my boss only has one day notice that I'm going to be out
right.
the next day.
But this actually worked out really well for you.
It did,
Easter Sunday, you know.
You said the sweetest thing going in.
What?
It was so cuddly.
What'd I say?
I said, because I was feeling apologetic because we were supposed to be at your family's for.
Oh.
And I was like, this is a weird Easter. He was like, how so? I was like, well, we normally do family stuff. He said, this is family stuff.
It is.
It's family stuff. And that was just the sweetest thing.
Well, it benefits the family and everybody's rooting for it. But this is a journey, you know, that we.
And if it's our family, like. You and I's family.
This is a journey we have to take, and there's been some different curveballs thrown at us, and so far we're taking it, and the Lord has helped us navigate, no matter how uncertain it is. Today, though, we got answers, and we know what our battle plan is. So now
I'm asking for everyone to help us pray specifically that this happens naturally following mm-hmm. these procedures.
Yeah. You know why?
I would love for it to happen this month.
Because guess what? If it happens naturally, it's cheaper. You save a lot of money.
It's true. It's true.
You save a lot of money.
I mean, we're at the end of the cost for fertility treatment, though.
Yeah.
Because with the choice not to go to IVF, IUI isn't going to help because you are inseminating properly. Yeah. So IVF is not going to help if the egg can't implant. Right. Because we're not having trouble with fertilized eggs, because he thinks that there's been probably quite a few fertilized eggs that just couldn't implant.
So we are at basically at the limit of where we can go with this.
Yeah.
And anything beyond this, if this doesn't work, then it's probably towards adoption.
Yeah.
So we would request that you all would pray for us. You got a prayer chain? We would feel, you know, we'd be happy if you put us on that and then just pray for us as we are going through this, that the Lord would find us worthy to bless us as parents. That would be that'd be our desire. You know, here I could find myself 5 years from now eating those words as some little tyrant.
Right after you stepped on a Lego.
Yeah, just, well, why did I do this again?
Legos are not allowed in our house, I'm just saying.
Yeah, so anyway, that's basically an update on the whole fertility thing that was going on, a little bit of my blood pressure stuff that I didn't really know I was going to deal with, but we've completely turned everything around. We're heading in the right direction. So we have a podcast coming up where we are going to be discussing, we are interviewing Elizabeth Ferguson, and we're going to be talking to her. That podcast will be coming up. It'll either come out this week or the following, depending on when we get that all arranged and taken care of. We've got another one where we are going to be discussing, we've got a good one that we're going to be doing on Jehovah's Witness, and that'll be another one. Mm-hmm. You want to save that for next time?
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
We've got one on Jehovah's Witness that we'll be discussing. We've got another one that we're going to do, on,
how the CHM sexualized men.
Yes, we got that one.
Hyper-sexualized men, I should say. Yes,
we got that one that's going to be coming out too. So we've got some interesting things that are kind of lined up down the line, but anyway, it's been a while, and just for health reasons and just the curveballs of life and things like that, nothing to come out. And so after today, we felt like we needed to say something and kind of just inform everybody. But this is where we are currently.
So this is our, and I'm going to say it like this, because I can link that one too, because it was an excellent message on the Saturdays in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that refers to the Saturday between when Christ was crucified and when he rose.
Mm-hmm. The silence.
The silence.
Mm-hmm. Tim Throckmorton did a really good job, because it was discussing the people.
Oh, he's not absent in his silence.
Yeah, just because God is silent doesn't mean he's absent. And a lot of people think that just because there's silence that he's absent, but that's not the case. I think when God is silent, that means he's working. And I think more people need to realize this. That was an excellent sermon. So, anyway,
So find courage in your Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Find courage in your Saturday. Yeah. Anything else you want to share? Are we good?
I think I've weeped enough.
Okay. All right. Well, folks, thanks again for tuning in for another podcast, Beyond the Vow. We got more stuff coming here soon. And we just kind of wanted to get you caught up. We just kind of had some extenuating circumstances kicking down the doors. And we wanted to at least give you an update. So, all right. We will chat at you later.